I have two objectives tonight. The first one is I want you guys to get to know this family. And secondly, I want to, if possible, provide vision for you all as to why we're partnering with Rancho 3M. So I don't want to assume anyone knows anything. Rancho 3M, can you define what Rancho 3M is? Because some people, most people, raise your hand if you've never been to Rancho 3M. It's probably a lot.
All right.
Good.
Great.
There's a lot of people who have no idea what we're talking about right now when we talk about Rancho 3M. So can you just give a quick overview?
Sure. Rancho 3M is a Christian orphanage and school in Guadalupe, Mexico, which is northern Mexico. We're about an hour east of the Juarez Sovereign Grace Church and an hour southeast of the El Paso Sovereign Grace Church. And we have children that are abandoned and abused. Most of them have a parent, but they might be in jail. They might be in drugs. And we have a lot of children that come from prostitution in the area. And so those are the type of kids that we care for.
Okay. Can you, just so that we get to know you, I want to hear just your story, what brought you to the ranch. But before that, just where'd you grow up? How did God save you guys? Dean, love to hear from you first. Denise, then love to hear your story of how God saved you and how God brought you together.
Yeah, we have different stories on how we met. but it's a really cool story.
You better just tell her story.
Denise's probably better.
Hers is a lot more interesting than mine.
Okay. All right, where'd you grow up?
I was born in Chicago for a year, Texas for a year. Then I grew up in Anaheim, California. And then from there, I went to Reno, Nevada for like 7th, 8th grade, and then high school, and then to New Orleans, Louisiana for school. And that's where I met Denise, and that's where the Lord saved us.
Excellent. What school?
Loyola University.
So tell us how you met.
Well, I'd been sailing all day, and I was tired and wanted to get it. This is before we were saved, okay, you guys? So I felt like getting a beer, and we went to a bar, and I saw Denise dancing with this other girl. You know what people do at bars. And I'm not advocating you guys meet your future wives this way, but I picked her up at a bar.
Excellent. Nice. Nice.
I did, and I'll tell you, it was God's provision. It was God's provision. This is before they courted and all this stuff. You know, this is, yep, we were pretty
Excellent.
Sinful.
All right. So tell me about just how God saved you, Dean, and then Denise. I'd love to hear just how God saved you.
This, I'll tell you, looking back on it, seeing, you know, since the scriptures say we're saved by grace through faith, and looking back on it and seeing the Lord pour out His grace in our lives is just, it is just amazing. Because, I mean, we were your typical everyday college sinners and in complete sin. I remember, you guys heard of Mardi Gras? You know, in New Orleans, like debauchery, Mardi Gras, it's interchangeable. Well, we were in New Orleans, it's very popular, and so we would go down to parades, participate in all the revelry, and then think to ourselves, now check this out, think to ourselves, all right, we're going to like leave the parade, go to Mass real quick, and then when we come back, then we can get smashed. But we won't get drunk before we go to Mass. And we actually, honestly, this is how pathetic we are, we actually thought it was a holy act to leave the parade and go to Mass and then come back. You know, and so what was your question?
So we were talking about how God saved you.
Oh yeah.
You're pretty good at all the bad stuff from your past.
It comes with the age.
Can we get to like salvation, redemption?
Yeah.
The cross, something about that.
It's a rough crowd, huh? So it was in college, and you know how like college can be very humanistic, and we were searching on how to get to heaven. I mean, we didn't care about the glory of God or anything. We just didn't want to burn in hell. And so we started asking all these different professors, how do you get to heaven? Mind you, it's a Catholic university, and we got probably a different answer from every person we asked. And I remember Denise and I were dating at the time, and I remember asking, or I remember seeing her on sitting down crying, saying, "All I want to do is go to heaven. What do we do to get to heaven?" And crying. And so I said, you know, being the guy, I was like, "Well, I'll tell you what. You know, we got all these different answers. At least we know the Bible's true. I'll read it and I'll find out and I'll tell you, right?" Just hang tight. You know, I'm trying to comfort her and be the guy leader thing. And so I started, somebody at that very time gave us, and chime in, because I know your story is a little different and you have a lot more details. So please jump in, okay? Somebody had given us an apologetics book called Roman Catholicism, and I got the catechism, and I got the Bible, and I started studying dogma for dogma, teaching by teaching of the Catholic Church, what does that say, and then what does the Bible say? And so that happened for a year, and during that time, the Lord would place different people in our lives and that were Christian, and they would ask us, you know, questions about our faith that we, of course, couldn't answer. And let me see. Oh, yeah. And I remember in junior year, I walked in the class, and my professor, she walked in and she said, "Hello, my name is Pam Van Epps, and I'm a Christian. I'll be your instructor this semester. And if you'd like to talk to me about Jesus Christ anytime this year, my office hours are dot, dot, dot." And I was like, wow, you know, she's one of those. Oh, yeah. And she was fired from another university because of her faith in Jesus Christ. And, you know, I was like, wow, she must be one of those born-again believer people. And but I respected her for, you know, her belief. And so the Lord had me in her office about 3 months or so, 2 months later. And she sat me down and she went through the Romans Road. She was a Baptist. And, you know, they had those little Roman Road Bibles. And she started going through that with me. And then, you know, I was just a really cocky college student. And so we had some discussion about that. And then she said, "I'll tell you what, if you think I'm taking all these things out of context, you take this home yourself, this New Testament, and read it cover to cover, and you tell me if I took this out of context." And then she gave me Josh McDowell's More Than a Carpenter. Went home, and what did I do? Yes, put it on my bookshelf. And time passed, and then the Lord just put it on my heart to start reading. And I'll tell you, this is kind of funny. I read Matthew, right? And then I read Mark, and I'm thinking to myself, man, she gave me a misprint. I just read these stories in Matthew. And I was serious, you guys. I was like, this is how ignorant we were. And I was like,
I remember he came over to my apartment one day and he said, "I'm reading this, but I don't get it. It's like I'm reading Greek."
So anyway, we were really dumb. So what happened?
So you wouldn't let her read it? Is that what the deal was?
No. I read it. I read it.
Okay, you're reading it too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I told that to my friend. I said, "Hey, this lady gave me a misprinted Bible. Can I have a real New Testament?" And so he explained to me that there's four gospels, and I was like, wow. So in this took about
a
year.
Get into the salvation moment anytime.
Is this your way of rushing me?
I love giving Dean a hard time. If you don't know Dean, you're getting to know him now.
We'll talk and talk,
and I love hearing his stories. He's got the greatest stories from his time down in the interior of Mexico. Right. Oh, it's great. When you go to Mexico, he'll tell you all of them. We're in suspense right now, waiting for that moment.
Then I'm on my balcony. It was nighttime. I'm all alone. I'd never even heard the word sinner's prayer before, but I was on the balcony reading. I was in the book of John. I'm telling you, God's grace, he poured it out. And he made me realize that I couldn't save myself, because we were taught that we could be good enough to go to heaven. And reading the scriptures, he opened my eyes. And I'll tell you, I prayed, I repented of my sins, and I said, "Lord, will you be the Lord of my life?" And it's really simple, very short. There's no lightning, no thunder. But I'll tell you, I had 500 pounds of weight off my back because we were mighty sinners. So.
Dean, can I hear, or Denise, can I hear your side of the story? And then can you... just from the college time, yeah.
Okay, right. So at that time, Dean had made some business friends. He was a business major, economics and finance, and I was an art major. So had we not gone to that bar, I don't think we would have ever seen each other at school because the campuses were in separate places.
So what was your first impression of him?
Oh, okay.
Honestly.
So, well...
Was it love at first sight? What was going on?
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, this story is more just showing God's mercy. When I think about how we met, I think, God, you are so good to take two filthy sinners like us and save us. And this is not a story like we're saying, follow our example, but just demonstrating God's mercy in our lives to save us and to make us into someone that he could use. And so when I was there that night, not 24 hours before, I had just broken off a 4-year relationship with a guy I thought I was going to marry. And just suddenly, it was like God hardened my heart towards this guy. I was like, this guy is disgusting. I don't want to see him ever again. I just broke it off, took down all his pictures out of my room. It was just kind of weird. And then the next night, I met Dean, and I was out with a bunch of friends, and... one of the guys I was kind of secretly seeing, and he had a girlfriend, and she ended up being pregnant, so that door was closed. And so when we met, I was, like, not looking for a relationship at all. And we had a mutual friend, and he said, hey, man, do you know that girl? And he said, yeah, I work with her sometimes. And so he introduced us, and Dean was like, hey, you want to go to lunch on Thursday during the window of school because it's a time when nobody has classes? I was like, well, I have a boyfriend, because I thought to myself, he is really cute. He's probably a jerk. Because all the guys I dated that were cute turned out to be jerks, and all the ones that weren't so cute were very nice. I thought, oh, he's a jerk. And he had this, longish blonde hair. He was a sailor. He was all rugged looking. He had just gone sailing that day. He used to go sailing every day. He's just a real extreme person. Whatever he does it all the way. And he's just really extreme, and which is actually a quality that I'm learning, that one of qualities of God is he's very extreme too. So that's something that I think is God-given. Oh, yeah, I wanted to cancel, but I didn't have his phone number, thank God. So we went out, and he took me to a Mexican restaurant, and I'd never been to one before. I didn't know what to order, but anyway, so from then on, he asked me, how old are you? And I said, I said, how old are you? And he said, I'm 24. And he said, oh, how old are you? I was like, you don't want to know, because I was 19 at the time. But he had gone to Loyola, and... he got kicked out. His best friend got run over by a car. Just lots of traumatic things. And he went back to California for a few years and worked. And then one morning he woke up and said, I have to go back. And by that time I was in the same grade that he would have been in. And so we ended up graduating together. But so anyway, he gets saved before I did. But all this time, God was putting different people in our lives, witnessing to us, asking us, do you really believe in the Assumption of Mary? And we're like, of course, what do you mean? And just questioning our faith. And Dean would tell a lot of people off, and I'd be like, yeah, you tell them, Dean. We were so arrogant.
But it wasn't until we got, I told you we were studying the dogma thing. It wasn't until we got to transubstantiation that we're like, there's something to this. And then we started reading that apologetics book, More Than a Carpenter, and I got to chapter 2, Lord Lunatic or Liar. I was like, man, this stuff is really real. So God used a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of events in our lives to draw us to him.
Denise, can you, do you have more to that?
So one of
can be encouraging. No, go ahead.
Okay. So one of those friends invited us to church. Out of all those people, only one person ever invited us to church. I just wanted to make that point because you always think, oh, they'll never go. But they called Dean and said, hey, would you guys like to go to church on Sunday? He's like, yeah. And he called me up. He's like, Denise, let's go to church on Sunday with them. And by this time, we knew a couple of people from the same church. So they invited us, and we went, and that was Lakeview Christian Center in New Orleans. And that's still our home church today. And the youth pastor at the time is the senior pastor now, Keith Collins. That's our pastor. And when we first went in there, we were like, why are all these people raising their hands? This is kind of weird. So where's the kneelers?
Then we heard someone speaking tongues and like, whoa, what's that? You know?
But as for me, it was like every time the pastor went up and said, would anybody like to pray the sinner's prayer? I would pray every time, just not knowing, am I really saved yet? Because growing up in the Catholic Church, they always told you, well, you can't really know if you're saved or not, and you have to do this, this, and this, but you're not really sure. And so for me, that was a big hurdle to get over, was I really saved? And so the Lord really helped me along with that. That was a wrestling thing.
But let me share, if anybody, you know, I don't know everybody here, of course, but if anybody is, you know, Catholic, please do not be offended by what we're saying. You know, this is just what the Lord has done for us. And I'd encourage you to read the Word.
Excellent. Denise, can you introduce your sons' ages?
Okay. The
can
oldest.
You guys stand up?
Where is you Taylor are? Sleeping?
Wake up, Taylor.
Wake Taylor up.
That's right. He's like, I heard this story, Mom and Dad, too many times.
Okay. Daniel's 7, and he's the shorter one. And then Jeremiah, middle age, is 9. And Taylor is 11. He already fell asleep, but I'm sorry. It's been a long day, and we are 2-hour difference.
So. No problem. Thank you guys for being here. Can you give us a short version of what took you from New Orleans all the way to Mexico, and then a couple different stops in Mexico, and how did you land at Rancho 3M?
What do you consider short?
3 minutes.
Just get three minutes?
Is that
what she said?
Enough? Yeah. 3 minutes.
Wow.
All right.
Let me see. Well, leaving off then from somebody inviting us to church, we started attending. Denise was saved, I believe, there. And then, we got baptized there. And then they had this advertisement for a short-term mission trip, short-term E-team trip. And we had no idea what that was. And the next year, we saw the advertisement, and we wanted to go, but we didn't have any money. We were very poor, out of college. And then we got married. That was 95. Okay. Then, you know, one thing I'm so grateful to the Lord for is that we were both believers when we got married. I just thank God for that because, wow. And so we were married. Actually, we would have been together. We'll be together 18 years next weekend. What? No. And then we didn't that year because we didn't have any money. But we wanted to because we'd heard all these testimonies and stories. And so the following year, as a married couple, we'd saved up our money and we did go. But for 2 years prior, when the Lord first saved us, I remember seeing that scripture in 1 Corinthians 6:20 that says, you know, we belong to Christ. We were bought at a price. So I was like, all right, Lord, you know, what do you want to do with me now? I already made all these plans. I just got a degree and I was planning on going into business. But what do you want me to do? So I prayed that. Off and on for 2 years straight. We go to the short-term missions trip in the middle of Mexico, and it was during morning devotions that I remember God revealing my own sin in light of His holiness. And, oh, man, it tore me up. And at the very end of that, I just really sensed the Lord put on my heart to come and serve this pastor. He was working in church planting down there, which was just an amazing work that the Lord was doing, and the miracle thing about it was that our pastor was totally confirmed it, was totally, and that right there, because he's an awesome man, but he's not quick to jump into things. And so, it's very good. It's a good quality. And so it was confirmed by our pastoral staff. And so we went back to the United States, and Denise had our firstborn son, Taylor, in the United States, and she finished her teaching contract. And then I gave my notice, and we went and served this pastor in Mexico. And I'll tell you, folks, we got to see, witness firsthand over 400 folks being saved over this period of time, couple few years. It was amazing. And but not just saved, but like saved, going to church. You know, it was just incredible. And so what I did there is I did logistics because I didn't know a lick of Spanish. and so we would go from village to village. This is very rural. You know, if Denise wanted milk, she'd wait for the guy with the cow driving, you know, walking down the street and the bell would thing, and she'd go out with the 2-liter bottle of Coke, and the guy would squirt it in there, and she'd take it in the house and pasteurize it. I mean, this is, our neighbors had dirt floors, bamboo huts, very rural, but we would go from village to village every day, different village every day, and we'd go from house to house asking people for prayer, inviting them to service, and then we would have a church service, and the Lord would grow these churches in different villages. And so we'd planted probably a good 14 churches while we're there, but we knew our time was coming to a close. We'd gone to Guadalajara for language school, where Jeremiah was born, right? And then I just really sensed the Lord put on my heart there to work in an orphanage setting, to train the children, disciple them in the ways of Jesus Christ, which I'd never thought about before. And my pastor, Key, said, let's just wait and pray. So a year passed. Our time in Tonkin was coming to a close. And through another awesome story that I won't tell because I'm on three minutes, then, but it's really exciting. But for the sake of time, I won't tell you. Just kidding, Dave. We packed up our pickup. We left Tonkin, and we came to Rancho 3M. It was about 36 hours driving. Denise was very pregnant for Daniel, and we drove through Mexico in our 86 pickup, which is pretty cool. Yep, with a cattle guard.
Excellent. And that's where you are now, right?
Yep. We've been there for the last little over 8 years.
8 years.
You know what? Can I share something real quick?
Yeah.
When we got there, the lady, she was she started this orphanage in 1969. Yeah, when she was like in her 50s, and she was just approaching 80 when we got there, and she was as sharp as a whip. And the first thing she said after this 36 hours in driving time, right? We're just exhausted. We get there, and the first thing she says is, whew, thank God you don't have long hair and tattoos. And then I was like, well, nice to meet you too. And then we worked on staff. And remember that time we were in the kitchen cooking? We did all the normal staff duties. This is before Irene kicked us, the founder kicked us out of the kitchen for burning the rice too much. But we were in there and we're chopping onions. And it's hard to cook for 70 people, you guys. It really is. And at that time, there's like 60, 70 folks. And we were chopping onions. These little boys knock on the door. And they bring in this box. It's in the dead of winter. There's ice on top of the box. And they said, hey, somebody just donated some meat. Where do you want me to put it? You just put it over there. Remember, Denise is pregnant, right? And so I said, oh, that was nice of somebody to donate some meat. So after I was done with my onion, I walked over to the box, opened it up, and boo, out jumps this boy, right? Just, ah, and scared us. And I thought Denise was going to go into labor. Dude. She, like, jumped a mile. It was funny.
So, Dean, tell us now, right now, how many kids are at the ranch? How many children do you have? What's the age range of the children that are there now?
Right now we have children from 4 to 15, and then we have one girl that's mentally handicapped at 26, and so we have 38 children, not including the children of staff. How's that for a short answer?
That was great.
That good?
That was
get
good.
Better.
You have to know how to ask the questions. See, that's the key.
Yeah, that is good.
That's a good job,
that
man.
Good. And how much fluctuation is there year to year with kids? Does when a kid comes to the orphanage, do they stay there long term?
Good question.
Sometimes is it quick?
Yep, I appreciate you asking that. Normally, we'd have about 50 children, and out of that 50, there would be 25 permanent that don't have anywhere to go. Kids like Alfredo that was just dropped off, you know. And check this out, you guys. Think about that. Just being like in the movies. A kid, I think it was, well, they don't know who it was, but this guy drove this little boy, he was probably five or six, and dropped him off at the ranch and left. And we couldn't figure out his last name. We worked with the government to make up a birth certificate for him. We made up his last name. We made up his birthday. What was his question?
He doesn't remember your question.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, the ebb and flow. Okay, so half the kids are there permanently, like Alfredo, like you know, David, people like that. And then we have another half where perhaps the parents are in jail or are on, you know, like I mentioned earlier, on drugs that just are flat out don't want the kid, but a couple few years down the road, an aunt or an uncle chooses to take custody of the child. So it's a half and half thing, and that explains the ebb and flow from year to year. But this past summer, at the end of the summer, we had an exodus of most of the older kids. Any of you that have been there before, there's two of our older girls, Brenda and Sonia. They were invited to go live and study up at a family in Mike Bulmore's church. And they're actually being discipled by them right now, which I think is just awesome. They're going to school. They're doing well. This family wants to adopt them. You know, it's just amazing. Sonia is another one of our older girls. Yeah, there's another Sonia. And she, this is funny. There's an intern. We have interns, young folks that come and serve at the ranch. And there's this one guy that was actually interested in one of the girls. He was like 19 or 20, but she was only 15. Yeah, she was interested in him too. That was the problem. So I kicked him out, and I asked him to leave. And I said, I'll tell you what, buddy, come back when she's 18. And this was during a whole time that we'd talked about, you know, kiss dating goodbye and started the courtship process and teaching and all that. And I'll tell you, they both remained faithful and pure. And when he asked permission to get to know her as a friend, you know, I willingly gave him permission. And then when he asked permission to court her, we walked through that whole season together of courtship. But I only gave him 6 months because you could tell their eyes. They want to last it much longer than 6 months. So gave him 6 months, and he got a rock. He called, I remember, asked permission to marry her. And just this Thanksgiving, you know, I gave her away as a pure bride. And I'll tell you, it's exciting. Very, very exciting. So.
Excellent. Transitioning to how our church is partnering with you guys and how we can support you. We know that there's a lot of violence going on right now in the city of Juarez, and just wanted to get your take on what the violence is like, who is it between, and do you feel like that violence is affecting the ranch at all?
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that question up too. There is a war going on. And it is real, but if I would have never told you that and you went there, you would never know it. Just before we came here, we'd gone down to the market, me and my boys, and besides the normal military checkpoints, you know, we don't see anything. It's not like when you hear there's a war going on, I'm thinking, you know, tanks and machine guns and, you know what I'm saying? Like, your mind can go in crazy spots. But this war is a war for territorial supremacy between different cartels, different drug gangs that want to control the border, because whoever controls the border makes the most money, obviously. And by the way, the U.S. is coming close to finishing their $7 billion fence, which has kept a lot of the crime in Mexico. And so, yes, it's real, but at the same time, I don't feel threatened at all. I don't feel afraid for the children. I talked to and I received counsel from the senior pastor of the Juarez Church, Carlos Contreras, good friend of mine, and what we're trying to convey to teams is there's a war going on, but it's between them. They're not looking for civilian folks, especially Americans. The one thing they're really afraid of is the U.S. FBI. In all seriousness, they're not looking to get just American folks, and you know, they're not. It's not like in the big cities where young people are holding up women with guns for their purse. You know, it's not like that type of thing. It's not like a terrorist type of war or activity. And so, yeah, it's criminals killing criminals, and it is, and they're doing an amazing job. And
so do you feel safer here or do you feel safer there?
I feel safer there than in a big city, I would.
So this was going on last summer and we still chose to go. And Matt, you led. So what were the precautions that we took?
Yeah, we just really followed Dean's lead on making sure that we stayed on the ranch the entire time we were there. And the trip, I don't know, Dave, if you have pictures to show or not, but the trip from El Paso where we land, we drive right down the border of Texas, Mexico, and then we cross over at Fabens, and we're only on the road for what?
7 miles.
7 miles from, so it's 7 miles of driving in Mexico, and then you're on the ranch, which is
in the back of Guadalupe.
That's what I was thinking. Back of Guadalupe.
Yeah, real quick. I wasn't trying to make a joke about the war thing and about the people dying, but it is really important when you read in the newspaper that these police officers were killed. Well, they were working for the mafia. You know, they're not like the normal police, law-abiding police officer and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's, I'd want people to know that we're taking it seriously when we go down there. We did change our itinerary. We didn't go into Juarez. We stayed in Guadalupe, where the ranch is, which is about an hour away. So there is some distance in terms of the safety. So there has been no violence on the ranch. And so if you're a mom out there and you're concerned about this violence, or you're reading something in the paper, please know that we do take that very seriously. But there has been no immediate threat to the ranch itself.
Right. And Dave, if you look at the numbers also, I think the papers are saying something like 1,600 murders, which has been confirmed. But out of that, there's been very, very, very little, less than 1% of bystanders or citizens being hurt. But of those, they were all in the city, which were an hour outside. But if you look at like murder statistics in big cities, it is far worse than the numbers in Juarez.
So we do stay away from Juarez because this is going on. And so, as Matt was describing, we fly into El Paso, which is an American city, obviously, and we drive down Route 10 in the U.S., and we cross over at a border crossing, and it's just in about 10 minutes, we're at the ranch. So the good thing is, this is what I love about this mission trip, because, you know, it is teenagers, so it's a lot of first-time mission trips for a lot of teens. You do, as soon as you cross the border, you do experience immediate poverty and immediate a life that is just foreign to us as Americans. And we get to go on this ranch, and we get to serve these children and share the gospel with them, which is what I want to get to. But the good thing about it is that if anything were to happen in 10 minutes, we're back across the border and we're back in the United States. So that's what the proximity to the border is really a nice benefit to have.
Yeah, you could, I-10 is like your 95. I-10, you know, goes Florida, California, that big highway. You could actually see that from the ranch, the interstate I-10 in the United States.
Good. All right, Matt, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, what these folks don't know, Dean, is how many different hats you wear. I was just thinking about, you know, you oversee a staff, you take care of these children, a little bit about your school. Just there are so many different things that you guys do throughout any given day. Could you tell us a little bit just about the school, about how that functions in the community for reaching out to people and how that works?
Yeah, Real quick. Is this computer on, by the way? Is it? I was going to show them a Google Earth map of.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's good.
See if I can do this.
Okay, how can you turn on that computer?
How do you turn it on?
No, like how do you make it go up there?
They're amazing.
It's magic, Dean. It's magic.
Wow. All right, so we fly into El Paso. We drive down Route 10.
Wait, it's not on there yet.
Yeah, it's over there. It's behind you.
It's behind you.
And so we zoom in to Guadalupe. I'm going to have to find this. All right, now I'm going to go to satellite image, and we can show you right where the ranch is. So you drive into Guadalupe.
Where is it, Dean? Where's that horseshoe?
Right there it is, right there.
There's the horseshoe.
Yeah, we don't have this technology there.
This is Rancho 3M right here. This piece of land. 18.8 acres right on this road is Rancho 3M. Let me see if I can get closer.
There's our house on.
Oops, wrong way. So this is the primary area for the orphanage, right? And this horseshoe is the school. They have a Christian school on site.
Elementary school, yep.
What was that?
Elementary school.
Elementary school. Yep. So this is where we're at. So when you're describing your different roles as director of the orphanage and also overseeing the school, just so people can understand what we're talking about.
Thanks, Dave, for that visual aid.
You're welcome.
That was really nice. Right when we got to the ranch, I really sensed the Lord putting on my heart to start a school for the purpose of helping us disciple the children better. Because the problem that we ran into, well, I have nothing against public school at all, but the schools in Guadalupe were very, very anti-Jesus Christ. I mean, extreme, to the point that kids getting in trouble for bringing a Bible to school, professors actually telling the kid, hey, did you know the devil's more powerful than, you know, God? Just, oh. And some girls got in trouble for not doing the homework and not drawing Maria de Guadalupe, which is one of the goddesses in Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. So they are very much anti-Jesus Christ. We built this elementary school to help us disciple the children better. And some of the guys at Carlos's church have helped us tremendously that know a lot about education. We're actually under their educational umbrella for a season until we got licensed ourselves. And what we found out, and the cool thing about this is since it's open to the community, there's about 170 students right now and that are having devotions every day, that are hearing the Word of God daily. And the Lord has saved a number of these kids. And not only that, but some of the parents. And it's turned into this big outreach throughout the whole community, which we're very, very excited about. The Lord has blessed us with an excellent reputation at our school. And are looking into the future, we strongly and desperately desire to have a middle school, which would be 7th, 8th, and 9th, to continue that. Because right now, you know, they're going from our school into, you know, out to the wolves. And really, I remember last year you were almost crying at the graduation. You know, these little girls are 10, 11 years old dancing, all provocative, and oh, it's terrible, you guys. And so we really desire, we just need to do 3 classrooms to continue the middle school.
Along those lines, tell us, because you oversee the orphanage, you oversee the school, tell us how it benefits you to have a group from Covenant Life, 50 teens and parents, 2 weeks in the summer. How does that benefit you and your vision to share the gospel with these children?
In more than I could express. And so let me just tell you a little story. One of our weaknesses as a staff, as any parent, is just the day-to-day operations. You know, moms, you guys know how busy you are. Dads, you guys are at work all day. It's like that for us. at the ranch as well. So we're not able to spend as much time with the children as we would like to. We try to, but it doesn't work out. And so groups coming in fill this enormous void that we have as a staff. And I'll give you an example of that. We, you know, like I mentioned, we accept interns sometimes. And there's this one girl. She'd been there in the past, like, what, 4 years ago, Molly? It was like 4 years ago, and I had no recollection of her whatsoever. She was in my office. I didn't recognize her. And some of the other children were in my office when she came in. She had just arrived, and some of the girls just tore out of the office, ran to their room, and brought something back. And what they'd got was this picture that this young lady, this American intern, had... it was like the Molly thing. It was her name, but a drawing. Yeah. And the point is, these girls, after 4 years, I didn't even recognize her face. These girls remembered her mom's name, how many brothers and sisters she had, how many pets she had, where she lived, how old she was, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, think about it. Think about you young people. You get dropped off. You guys talk a little different up here. We're from the desert. But you young folks, imagine this, or you parents, about your own children. They're dropped off at a home, children's home, and you leave. And you're just there. And you're one of 40 kids. And somebody says, all right, this is the dorm. Here's your bed. That's it. Then you go and you eat dinner. And you go back to your dorm, and your mom's not there, your dad's not there to kiss you goodnight, to read you a story, nothing. Not to call you, nothing. You are on your own. And, you know, that gets pretty lonely, you guys. I could not imagine my boys in that situation. There's a level of sin that exists out there, folks, that I never knew existed until we started working there. A level of selfishness that is just phenomenal. And so we have kids that are desperate for attention and love and the gospel. And by you guys coming, groups coming, and you know how you are. You just love up on the kids. You pay attention to them. I mean, think about if you're that little kid and you're going to bed. I remember we used to live in the dorms before Daniel was born. And Denise was, we lived in the little boys' dorm. And, I mean, there's 4 inches between our apartment and all the little boys. And I remember Denise was out there, at night, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, because the little boy, you know, or two or three are crying because his mom is not there. And so that's the void that groups fill, is they come and they just lavish the child with attention. They play basketball with them. They give them hugs. They do crafts with them. You guys, it might sound really simple, but it's like James talks about visiting widows and orphans in their trouble. These kids are in their trouble, and you guys visiting them makes a big difference. Sonia's the example. Remember that girl I told you about that got married? All those years of, you know, you youth girls, your middle, whatever, girl, young ladies, going there and having these, you know how girls talk for a long time and into the night, and they just, I don't know what they do.
Look who's talking.
You know how girls talk for a long time.
Oh, this is right. Oh, boy.
Couldn't let that one pass. Sorry, all dude. Right.
Yeah, you know, girls stay up all night. They talk about modesty. They talk about purity. And, you know, they encourage one another. And that's what was happening with Sonia. And look, she just got married, you know, as a virgin bride. I'm excited about that. But that's groups coming down, relationships that are built. They remember names. They remember Andy's boy and a lot of folks. Alex. You know, but the point is, those relationships mean a lot.
Good. Good. And I would, one of the things I wanted to do tonight was for you all to gain a vision for why we're partnering with this orphanage and why we are every summer going down. And, you know, Dean just talked about all the practical implications of this, loving these children. But we as the church are fulfilling our call to serve these orphans, literally, and to go and share the gospel with them. And so I love when we go down there, what we do is we have building projects and we have vacation Bible school. So usually half the group, you try to go to both if you can throughout the week. But some people just want to stay with the kids the whole week. And basically you're just doing crafts and ministering the gospel to them for 8 straight hours. And these kids just soak it up and they love it. So it's just such an opportunity to share the gospel. And share the one with Adam.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I remember Adam was kind enough to go through not even a hint with our medium age boys and older boys. And it was this past summer, he did a phenomenal job teaching that. And it really, I don't know if you're here, Adam, but it really made an impact on those young men. It really, really did. And that summer, two of the boys in the middle of the class week came into the office and just were sensing God's grace, and they asked, you know, what do we do to become Christians? And we talked about it for a season. We prayed. We're walking through that, you know, and it's just, it's exciting. It really is exciting. I mean, that's worth it, guys. I mean, for one soul, it's all worth it.
Amen. Tell us about some of the building projects that you have lined up that we can come and serve you with. On Friday night, we went to Dean and Matt and myself and a couple other guys in the church, went to the Torzik's house and just spent the evening talking about building projects that we can do in the future. And just trying to brainstorm, just hearing Dean and wanting to know what's on his heart. So just, can you give us a brief, here's the plan, here's what would serve us?
Yep. Since we got there many years ago, we've always had a desire to house babies. For the purpose, most homes in all of Juarez, they don't accept babies, and so all of them go to the government. And so they probably have, the last I checked, 120 or so infants. And I'd like to get some of those babies and become an adoption agency for the purpose of getting those babies adopted out into Christian families, because I just think that's a phenomenal representation of what Christ has done for us. Amen. With the adoption. So we have, you know, that needs to be worked on. We also need a middle school, finishing the fence. There's a number of projects that need to get done.
Yeah, there's a lot of small projects that can be done that would really save a lot of costs in terms of doors and fixing doors and weatherproofing windows.
Good stewards of the money.
Yeah. And so, you know, part of in the next upcoming months, we're going to be doing sign up to go. We're going to be trying to create a list. And if you're a skilled carpenter, if you have skills in a particular area, electrician, we would love for you to come, because there's plenty of projects on the ranch.
And not even limiting to that, we could use almost any skill. If you know, from hair cutting, cake decorating, you know, any skill, everyone. Oh yeah, check this out. There's a this is why we do an inventory of skills. Some of the staff had been really wanting to teach the little girls ballet, right? Yeah, just so they're more graceful. And why are they laughing? All right, are you guys done? No, just kidding. So we you know, I asked for inventory of skills before people come, but this lady, for some reason, didn't write down that she's a professional ballerina. So this lady was here at the ranch all week, and on the last day, we find out that she's a ballerina. And so we could have been using her all week to be teaching our girls ballet. And so the point is, it's construction, yes, but we can use lots of other skills as well.
Good. Can I ask Andy and Corinne to come up just for a sec? Andrew? One of the things, these mission trips, if you hear from anyone who goes, they're just a blast. We have a lot of fun. We serve like crazy. It's hot. And we work all day, and we stay up late and have tons of fun. But I don't want these mission trips to be known for that. Because what you win people with, you win them too. So I'm not trying to win people to a mission trip with, hey, it's a lot of fun. Because that's not the purpose of it. What I want to win people to this mission trip with is the fact that we are going to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with these kids who literally have been abandoned by their parents, who go to sleep every night with no mom, no dad. They wake up every morning with no mom, no dad. And just what this couple is doing in Mexico is just amazing. So what a privilege it is that we get to partner with them and support them. So I was talking with Andrew last night, and he was just communicating. We were just hanging out. Was it last night? Yeah, last night. And he was just saying, he was telling me why he thinks people should go. So I said, hey, can you share that tomorrow night? So totally off the cuff, I'm putting you on the spot here. But can you share with me what you shared last night? What spiritual benefit has it been for you in your experience at the ranch?
Yeah, sure. Well, like I said last night, I probably won't be able to remember everything that I told you last night. As I was thinking about what I said, it sounded really good to me. So, just I guess one of the biggest things that has impacted me is just realizing that when we go on this mission trip, it's a mission trip for us, but it's not a mission trip for these kids. This is where these kids live every day, and this is the reality of where they've grown up, and this is all that they know, and this is just our opportunity for us to leave the comforts of this huge building and just go down and really just spend a week or 2 weeks just really serving these kids. And the impact that we make on them is really, I was shocked. I went for 1 week 2 years ago, and last year when I went back, I had probably three kids that remembered me by name. And it was like, it was amazing, because I don't know how many, you have like 30 churches come down, right? Something like that? Not that many? I don't know. There's 10, still a lot. It's, I don't know. But there's a lot. I mean, it's just the impact that...
It just shows you how much those kids...
Yeah, just how much these kids love... Just...
Yeah.
Yeah, how much these kids love just us being there and just the impact that we make. And it's like, it's such a minor sacrifice for us, but it's just the impact that we have, that we can have on their life, and just to show the love of Christ and to just be a witness to them, and it's just really phenomenal.
Good. Corinne, what's been your experience?
Well, I've gone three times. I'm hoping to go back again this summer, and I actually just got back from a week in Mexico in Juarez for a Spanish Four trip, so it's not that bad as everyone says it is. It's pretty safe. I just wanted to share a story. Last year when I went, one morning that we were having our personal devotions, I was out and these three little girls came over and wanted to draw in my book that I had, my journal, and just like listen to me and everything. And in my pride, I was like, I can't have them sitting here. I have to get my quiet time done. Oh my goodness. So I was kind of like trying to be nice and telling them to go away like nicely. But I was just like, I have to pray for my day. And I ended up telling them in Spanish, which is amazing in and of itself. And so they just were like, they just decided that they wanted to pray with me too. So they stopped what they were doing. They put their stuff down, they closed their eyes and folded their hands. And I was like, oh my gosh, they want to pray with me. What am I going to do? So I was like, Lord, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to pray in English? Do you want me to pray in Spanish? What am I supposed to do? And God just gave me this amazing peace in that moment. And I just started praying in Spanish, and I know I butchered it, and I know it probably sounded really off and really bad, but just the opportunity that I had to share the gospel through prayer and just spend time with those kids and show them love just through simply praying with them was just a moment I'll never forget. And it was such an impact that it made on me, and for them it was just a simple prayer, but for me it just showed me that God can move through anything. He can move through boundaries and language. He can move through me just praying for my day, and he's an awesome God. And Mexico just shows you that in a completely different level.